Welcome back to this week's episode of Let's Talk Security Testing, the podcast where we talk all things security testing. Today, we're talking about micro pen tests. Yes, you heard that right. Micro pen tests. As you can imagine from the name, it's not necessarily a term we've coined, but certainly been used elsewhere and kind of makes sense to apply it in this case. But I think before we get into what a micro pen test is and why it's useful, how rude of me. I thought it would be good to think about, you know, when we make big things smaller, it's not necessarily always a bad thing. Is there any examples, Tom, that you can think of things that are typically maybe not necessarily large, but of a size, and if we made them micro, they would be improved somehow?
People.
People?
Know. Well, yeah, you're bigger than me, and I reckon I'm...
You think you'd be an improvement
better
of this?
Better at pool than you.
Fair enough. I asked you for your opinion. Yeah, go on. Anything else?
Well, I mean, surgery is a great example. Probably a more
surgery.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
thinking like dogs.
No, bigger the better with dogs.
Tiny little small ones. Right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, go on. Fine. You give me one.
No, I've got surgery. What do you mean?
Well, so I had surgery a few years ago, and I got the option. They can either slice me open, or they can do this, keyhole surgery, I think they call it.
Did they call the alternative slice you open?
Yeah, that's basically what they said. And they gave me the option, both minimal risk, but one of them, I'd get a tiny little cut, and one of them a massive, massive scar.
Sounds
at
like
the
they
end,
were
and it
really trying
like
to sell you on one of the options by the sounds of it.
They did, because it's true. Smaller was better.
Yeah. Okay. So smaller can be better.
Yeah. You give me an example. Go on then.
Fine. I mean, big chocolate bars are nice, but the little small fun. I mean, they call them fun size. They don't call them fun size because they're worse. They call them fun size because, sorry, if people are listening in from places that aren't the UK, you might have fun size bars elsewhere, but here they call them fun size. Party, for like a party occasion. Cakes. Yeah.
I feel like
what
you're
do you
listing...
prefer, like a slice of a big cake, or your own micro cake, also known as a
cupcake? I think I prefer the big cake.
Do
usually.
You?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But you wouldn't have a big cake, you'd have a slice of it.
Well, yeah, and then I can have another slice, and then I can have another slice.
But you get many cupcakes. I just think having the whole cake to yourself is... I mean, look, we're probably getting sidetracked here, but I guess the point stands. Things can be better smaller. Not always, but things can be better smaller. So micro pen tests. I guess I'll give a brief summary of what these are. And they're actually a consequence of something we were talking about in our last podcast, because we were talking about threat modeling, the concept of threat modeling development changes. And one of the things that comes out of threat modeling development changes is a really, really small threat model. Not what you'd see for a big application, but something you'd see for maybe even something as small as a bug fix. But what that then results in is recommendations to do really, really small tests, right? Because the scope is restricted to often a single API endpoint or a single ticket. And then the methodology is also restricted down from what pen test methodology would cover 20, 25 vulnerabilities, even in a standard test.
Well, more than that, I think. You know, it's 150 CWEs that you could find in any given application.
And we're reducing that down to, I mean, not necessarily this many, but on some occasions, 2-3 vulnerabilities. So you've got to skim down methodology, skim down scope, and ultimately it's to provide value of a level of assurance against that threat model. So these micro pen tests are exactly that. They're a small version of a full pen test. that encapsulate some of the same techniques, just with a reduced scope and a reduced methodology. Tom, what are some of, I mean, you carry these out on a, I don't know, a daily basis, you and your team. What are some of the revelations, I suppose, that have come across, you know, having worked in doing big pen tests pretty much your whole life? Well, your whole life, but maybe, what, four upwards? To doing these kind of micro pen tests, and I guess what's the trade-off that customers are making when they're looking at either option?
Sure. So, I mean, the advantage of a micro pen test is that you can be really, really focused just on what matters at a given time, right? I think of a micro pen test as having the three A's. You know, a good quality micro pen test is an area of a system for a set of vulnerabilities. And in doing that, you can be really confident that if you care about business logic flaws, you care about your API, and there are certain endpoints within it that are particularly important to you, then you can be confident at the end of that micro pen test that there are or there aren't business logic flaws. Whereas if you ask a pen tester, pen test this entire application, its back end, its API, its front end, then at the end of that, it's a kind of a black box, right? You put some trust in them to have covered the API and potentially identified business logic flaws, but the lack of specificity to it leads to a lack of confidence in the output. The trade-off for that is that you're not turning over every stone every single time you do the test, but that's not necessarily a problem. As long as you're doing these regularly, it's iterative improvement, which I think is something that certainly engineering teams are encouraging, but governance and risk teams are also encouraging. And I think it's just a different way of being able to look at your security testing approach.
Yeah, it also combats this, you know, we talk about the need to do human testing because there are literally entire classes of vulnerability that scanners simply can't find. And yet we live in this world where people say pen testing cannot be performed inside an SDLC, cannot be performed even remotely close to a pipeline. And yet, so the only real way of doing it is grouping changes and doing more frequent traditional pen testing. This contradicts that theory, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it will still break the pipeline. Fundamentally, CI pipelines take minutes to hours to run, and this kind of thing, in the times where you need to run it, right, because you don't need to do it on every single change, you only need to do it on the changes that require a micro pen test. You know, if you're updating fonts, if you're maybe adding a new image or resizing something, you don't need to do this at all. But yeah, it will break pipelines, but it won't crucially break the sprint. It fits inside the same SDLC that every developer, every engineer, every team pretty much in the 21st century is working on. And, you know, that leads to really cool things like feedback loops, right? You speak to people all the time, and I think the term that you use is the teaching moment. Do you want to, you know, talk about what the value behind that is?
Yeah, I mean, certainly human-found vulnerabilities can often provide many additional benefits that scanner-found vulnerabilities don't produce, right? Being able to discover a vulnerability with a tool and then surface a issue description, write up remedy steps from a KB somewhere isn't providing the same value as a human saying, hey, I found something, giving you a detailed POC on how they found it, steps to replicate, files, you know, custom screenshots, all the kind of information you get. So there are obvious benefits to human pen testing that scanners don't have. And whilst the feedback loop might not be instantaneous or within minutes to hours in a pipeline, bringing that down to, you know, 48, 72 hours after a ticket has been pushed into a QA environment or something similar, even prod, pulling that down and all the benefits that come with traditional pen testing and human-led pen testing down to a 72-hour window gets all those benefits, but it gets them much closer to the real time that a scanner provides. And that real time component is not just a nice to have. That real time component is essential to the developer still having the knowledge of that sprint, of that code change, when they made the change. So, like, you know, that teaching moment that I talk about is like the pen tester and the developer having a conversation about something they did several days ago, and then being able to say, oh, I can see what I did there, I can see why that happened, and I know how to prevent it from happening in the future. Do it any different way, and a pen test finds a logic flaw in a system 9 months after it was created, and the job is just to fix it. You know, there's no, you can't dissect that, you can't find out who really did it, and even if you could, they're probably not going to take anything from the description because they don't remember the conditions that they were working in at that time. So, you know, it's very difficult to work out.
Yeah, it's not just remembering the conditions and understanding it. There's a relevance factor to it, like an ownership factor, I think, that is massive on it. You know, if you write, let's say, you write, I don't know, a letter, you send it to me to proofread that letter, and I come back and I suggest 5 or 6 changes to you a few hours later, you will probably affect those changes. You'll say, thank you, I've taken that on board, and then you'll send it off. If I provide you that information 6 months later, once you've already sent that letter, you've forgotten about it, you've sent 1,000 other letters, you'll probably just say, why should I care? You know, it's done now, it's gone, it's past the point of me having any ownership of it. And so I think it's really, really difficult to affect any long-term meaningful change when you've got this complete disconnect between what security is finding and what developers are actually focused on. Okay, so we've got these micro pen tests, or rather we've got these micro pen test scopes that say what to test for and where to look at. Can just any pen tester or any pen testing team start delivering micro pen tests tomorrow? Or what does it take to actually go from this concept to actually seeing micro pen tests being carried out?
I mean, I think it's a damn sight easy if you've got an internal pen testing function, right? I mean, I guess just to pick up on that particular example. So if you've got an internal pen testing function, they're probably to some extent already testing changes. There's two stages to micro pen tests. There's the stage of getting to the point where one is written. And obviously, with the nature of micro pen testing and the frequency of it, it can't be a manual exercise like to arrive at that conclusion. There's just simply too many of them. What you're effectively doing is upping the frequency, but becoming a lot more targeted, right? So it's not about doing less or more testing. It's just about being more scientific in your approach. So you need an automated solution to get the micro pen testing, the micro pen tests available to you in a relatively efficient manner. Once you've got them, like an internal pen testing function can pick these up. And what we see, like, you know, practically, is that actually if you've got people responsible for change testing internally, it's faster. You know, they're getting more done with less people. Likewise, QA teams. I mean, if you've got a QA team that does functional testing and everything else, like, they might already pick up security in one way or another, but this type of instruction, as long as they come from a security background, you know, and some of these tests, I'm going to say you don't even necessarily need to be a pen tester for, like, some of them you do, but, like, explaining, saying, you know, we're concerned about session expiration in a email expiry link bug fix, you have to be a pen tester to check session expiration, right? Like, yeah, pen tester can do it, it's part of the job, but, you know, just doesn't need to be a pen tester. So I guess an internal member of staff is a good way of doing this. Outside of that, you know, you're not going to be able to walk into your local pen testing house and say, can I have a 40-minute pen test? That's just not happening. So, you know, where do you go? Speak to people, I suppose. You know, find out. Obviously, it's something that Citix provides, but it will catch on. It will become more of a known thing. Yeah. I think that's what I've got to say on it.
Cool. I think that's probably a good place to end covering micro pen tests. What are the key takeaways you'd say from today's conversation?
You know, this one and the last one, I think, is the same thing. It's about start thinking about threat modeling changes. Start thinking about how testing can become more targeted. You know, no matter what the question seems to be in security, the answer always seems to result in more pen testing. You know, I don't necessarily think more is better. I think thinking about what can make it improve for your organisation. What can make it improve for your organisation, I think, is really, really important. So start, have a think about development changes, threat modelling, start thinking about those pen testing results that you got last year and think, how did they get there? You know, was there an easier and faster way of getting these results without necessarily having to spend a truckload of money on a one-off consultancy exercise? And talk to people like QA teams, talk to these sorts of people and start having to think about how they might be useful in the equation. But yeah, I think that's what we've got time for. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed our ramblings again. I hope it's useful. We're thinking about doing some more episodes. We're always thinking about our topics and titles. So if anyone has any suggestions about things we want to cover, maybe you want us to go deeper into something we've already covered, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Or maybe you just want more examples like Tom's surgery in terms of things that would be better smaller. I'm still not sure about this one. But thanks for listening, and we'll see you again in a couple of weeks.
Bye now.